After 20 years in the pulpit, Curtis Stemp says he's more grandfather than preacher, more friend than missionary. Energetic and concise in his 70s, Stemp leads services at the tiny Vineland Indian Chapel on the west side of Lake Mille Lacs.
This morning, those that would like to follow along with me, turn to John 10 and 10.
This morning's turnout is small, about a dozen people. During the sermon, two little girls leave their seats to stand up front with Pastor Stemp, sometimes climbing the lectern, sometimes leaning against him to listen. To Stemp, the relaxed tone is just right.
You can't go in there and say, I'm a white man, and carry on in that manner. I'm not here to present some new thing for you to accept. I'm here because I love you people.
As Stemp puts it, he's always drifted toward American Indians. He grew up near the White Earth Reservation, at ease in the homes of Indian neighbors. They were his fellow soldiers in World War II, and his closest friends afterward, while working in Onamia. At some point, he says, it occurred to him his drift was actually his calling.
The Lord has an agenda for us through life, and he arranges circumstances that put us into his program. We are one. So there is no racial thing there with us. And I don't see them as Indian people. I see them as my family.
And if the general doesn't like it, he can sit on a tent. Ouch! Sit on a tent. Ouch!
The Vineland family has seen big changes during Stemp's two decades here. The 80s, economic high times for many, saw per capita income actually fall among outstate American Indians. Joblessness rose to 55%. When he arrived, one in three Indian children lived in poor households. By 1990, it was one in two. Then in the early 90s, the Mille Lacs Band made two provocative choices: to sue the state for long-extinguished fishing and hunting rights, and to build casinos. Though reluctant to talk politics, Stemp says many non-Indians refuse to look at those issues from a native viewpoint.
Our chief then was Mr. Garbo, and his goal was to better the lot of the people. And Margie came in with the same intentions. After Art died, she came in and she followed what he was up to. And I have noticed nice homes, nice streets, street lights, beautiful schools, a beautiful clinic. And if you go up there and go around that village, I think there's something wrong with anyone that will condemn the casino straight out.
As for treaty rights, Stemp says he's glad the case is over, but that in truth, he rarely discussed it. He says for non-Indians especially, the case became a stumbling block, a detour away from things that matter.
Let us go on and be family. There'll be things that I don't agree with. There'll be things they don't agree with. We're going to be family regardless. And how many families do you have that you don't have friction?
It's hard to pinpoint why some adapt well in a different culture and others don't. John Pupart, whose American Indian Research and Policy Institute is headquartered in St. Paul, says research suggests few people ever grow comfortable living or working as cultural minorities. And he says those who do often share some of Pastor Stemp's traits. They ignore politics. They pay attention to history. They listen more than they talk.
It's very abstract, and you got to pick up on nuances, and you got to pick up on silence as a means of communication.
Pupart believes the recent Supreme Court treaty affirmation injected reason into an emotional war. In the calm that follows, he says, it might be easier for individuals on both sides to disown racism.
I think there are people who are willing to put the olive branch out, for example. I would caution them, don't organize in a human relations committee or an anti-racism committee, because then you buy all the frame of reference that goes with fighting racism. Rather than working against something, why don't you work for something? Where do we want to be and how can we make that happen?
At Central Lakes College in Brainerd, Dennis Eastman tries to keep one eye on practice at this end of the gym, the other on his 10-year-old boy, Zach, shooting hoops at the far end. Eastman is CLC's athletic director and a successful basketball, football, and volleyball coach. He's a member of the Crow tribe, an heir to centuries of tradition he knew nothing about for the first 30 years of his life.
That was the time when President Johnson was in an office, and he was trying to get rid of the reservations, so they were taking people off the reservations and sending them to different areas for work. And my dad ended up going to Los Angeles. He was so bent on fitting in that he didn't want to be unusual. I think he wanted to fit in so much that he just buried some of this stuff in his soul.
Eastman says he understands his parents' decision not to raise him in the Crow culture. There seemed to be no future on the Montana reservation, and the watchword of the early 60s was integrate. But having no history put him at a disadvantage as the only Indian in his Los Angeles neighborhood, and even more so on trips back to Montana.
I was always called the apple. What that means is you're red on the outside but white on the inside. I was sort of beaten up by both sides. You know, you roll up that thick skin and let it hit you and then just keep on moving.
Dennis Eastman did keep moving, to Utah, then North Dakota in the 70s, then to college in Moorhead. At a wedding dance in the Red River Valley, he met Pam Halverson, the daughter of Scandinavian beet farmers.
When I met Dennis, I didn't know what nationality he was. I just thought he was good-looking and wanted to go out with him. I really didn't know he was Native American. And I had a picture of him, and I remember showing my parents, and their eyes got kind of big. And then, you know, they started talking, and I remember feeling very angry with them.
Dennis and Pam have been married 17 years. They say in mostly white Brainerd, they are still occasional targets for racial suspicion. But 3 years ago, something happened that removed most of the sting. Dennis's father moved back to the reservation. He broke his silence about Crow traditions. Dennis immersed himself in his history.
When I walk into some place and people say, well, you know, what are you? Well, I'm a Crow. You know, I used to say, well, I'm Native American or I'm Indian. Well, now I say I'm Crow. I'm Crow from Montana. You know, I'm from the Whistling Water Clan. You know, so I can tell these things, who I am and where I'm from. It's a different type of confidence.
The Eastmans say they're passing on these lessons to their children, whom they hope will find it easy to live in either culture instead of difficult in both. Leif Enger, Minnesota Public Radio.